Welcome to another episode of Tales from the DC Multiverse, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Travis. Travis, how's it going?
Pretty good, Adam. Just watched the big Leafs W, and now ready to talk DC.
Yeah, so our hockey team wins. We're happy, and we got some things to talk about today, so let's get right to it.
Yeehaw.
As we always start, do you have any comic book recommendations?
Unfortunately, people, I do not. I was stuck in a small town for 5 days. I had an alternator go in my SUV, which was, and no auto shops open on Saturday or Sunday. We had a snowstorm on Monday. I was only able to get it fixed on Tuesday. So no comic book recommendations for me this week, unfortunately.
All right. Well, you're in luck because I can save the day like Superman with a comic book recommendations. You know what? I'll throw in two. How about that?
Oh, there you go. You're picking up my slack.
And they're both, and funny enough, they're both issues of the last two issues of Justice League, which, you know, are written by Scott Snyder. What I like about this arc that he's undertaking is he's picking up where he left off with that. I remember I told you about the Dark Knight Metal.
Yes, you did. Story.
So he's picking up with that, and it's dealing with the ramifications of that. But also in those two stories, he basically gives us, let's say, new insight into a once friendship that has now been forgotten, and that's a friendship between Martian Manhunter and Lex Luthor. And I won't spoil why that friendship had been forgotten, but it explains that in one issue, and then in the follow-up issue, it gives us a look back into Lionel Luthor, who, you know, in the comic counterpart, was known as a drunk who beat his children. But actually, his backstory is revealed that he was sort of the cunning, smart businessman that we, you know, were used to from Smallville. And there's a reason why Lex came to know of him as, you know, the drunk, abusive individual that Lex grew up with. So those two issues, the most recent two, were very revelatory in terms of Lex Luthor specifically. So that's why I recommend them.
That sounds pretty fantastic, to be honest with you, Adam. John Glover's portrayal of Lionel Luthor was one of my favorite things about Smallville.
Yeah.
And if you get any kind of backstory, even somewhat similar to how he portrayed a character in the first few seasons, then that's definitely a treat.
Yeah, no, and I think once you get around, if you get around to reading it, you'll enjoy it, and I think so will most of our audience. So.
Oh, definitely, that's going on the read list for sure.
All right, then that's comic book recommendations. We do have some brief news items this week, both big, you know, big items, but we'll talk about them. The first is that, obviously, with Aquaman making over $1 billion worldwide, a sequel was a no-brainer. I mean, we even talked about it on one of our shows that they hired one of the writers of the first one to come back. Well, now we know when we're going to be able to see that second Aquaman film. And the date for that is December 22nd, 2022. What do you think about them reusing the, or going back to, I should say, the December release date, Travis?
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think this is smart play. This is somewhat similar to what they did with Wonder Woman, putting it around the same time as the first movie, like a few years in advance, but same month. So I kind of like this. This will be like Aquaman's time to shine. And I hear people complaining about 4 years until we see another Aquaman. People, the VFX, the stunts, the way they actually film people underwater is all with wires. This film is going to take a ton, and we don't want it rushed at all. So I'm just sit back and enjoy it until we get there.
Yeah, you make great points about VFX and stunts and all that takes time, especially with the underwater. You know, they have to create the sensation of underwater and they have to create that world. But also, I think the 4-year gap allows James Wan more time to decompress, possibly do a smaller film, and then he'll be even more agreeable to potentially coming back. Whereas if Warner Brothers were to say, okay, well, now we want another movie in 2020 or 2021, you don't give James Wan much time to breathe and sort of decompress. And maybe a quick turnaround would have turned him off to coming back. So I think, the time in between release dates allows you a better chance of getting James Wan to return to the director's chair. But also, we got to remember that there are a lot of movies that we're going to be seeing DC-wise between now and the release of Aquaman 2. So it's not like we're going to be lost or missing content. There's plenty of movies and TV to keep us busy between Aquaman's next swim through Atlantis.
I couldn't agree more, Adam.
For a late night pun.
I couldn't agree more. That just makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So, speaking of TV, kind of, sort of, more specifically, streaming, we have some casting news for season 2 of Titans, do we not, Travis? Why don't you tell us about it?
Yes, we do. We finally have Connor Kent, Superboy cast, and it is actor Joshua Orpen from Melbourne, Australia. He's only been in a couple things. The Neon is the main movie that he's been in. But like you said, he has some theater work as well. But he's born in 94, so he's still on the young age. It's good for me. I like, with the rest of the cast, a lot of relative unknowns. So we get to just grow with them as they grow in that character. So I like to see that from shows. And I don't know about you, but this gets me really happy. I just know he needs to buff up.
Well, I love the character of Connor Kent in Superboy. So I'm happy that that tease at the end was really a highlight for me of the final episode. But also, looking at the actor, when I mentioned the theater experience offline, that really impresses me because we've seen great performances from, actors with theater background that have come into the superhero film genre, right? Like, if you look at, let's go to the other side of the street for a second. If you look at Marvel, right, you had Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart, who, yes, they've done a lot of big screen work, but their careers started and really they gained experience and honed their craft from theater work. Then, like, if you look at, go to the DC end of things, you have Christopher Reeve, of course, who played Superman, was a graduate of the Juilliard School for the Arts. And you have Ray Fisher, who before Justice League had nothing but theater work under his belt. So, and I thought, certainly Christopher Reeve did a phenomenal job, and I really enjoyed what Ray Fisher did with Cyborg. So that is a plus for me. And look-wise, I looked at side-by-side picture of him and, the modern-day Superboy with the T-shirt and the jeans, and it's a spot-on. Like, he looks spot-on like the character. I like the age. I like the 25-year age range. I think Chris Reeve was 25 when he got the part. And I also think that maybe Brandon Routh, if I remember correctly, was 25 when he got the part. Henry Cavill, he's my age, so he's 32 now. 2012, let's say he probably got the part. So what is that? 2012 was 7 years ago. 32 minus 7.
Boom, 25.
Yeah, so there's a trend here. So, and the fact that I did math this late at night is also impressive. But But yeah, so 25 is around the, you know, the go-to range for Superman, quote-unquote Superman, in this case, Superboy actors. But there you have it. So I'm on board with this. I can't wait for Superboy's introduction on Titans, especially based off that ending. So yeah, the sooner season 2 gets here, the happier I'll be.
I think it starts filming in the spring, Adam, if I remember correctly. And also, I just got to say, besides the Chief in the one episode of Titans that the Doom Patrol was in, I don't think there's been a bad casting in this entire like DC universe so far.
So I don't have anything.
When you give me so many examples of doing the right way, I'm just going to believe that you're going to keep doing it. So I don't expect anything but good, anything less than good things from this kid.
Yeah, and in the spring, that means that they're coming back to Toronto. I know that. So
they'll be here.
And so not only will we have Titans filming in Toronto, but we'll also have playoff hockey, my friend. So two things to look forward to.
It's getting pretty. That's getting pretty well the norm now for Toronto. Playoff hockey and superhero.
DC filming, yeah, because Suicide Squad sort of started the ball, and then Young Justice, and now this, or not Young Justice, Titans season 1, and now Titans season 2. So, yeah, it's gonna be good. I can't wait. Like I said, can't wait. All right, so that's pretty much all the news we have. So why don't we get into our two TV reviews this week?
Yes, let's do that.
And as always, since it airs first in the week, let's start with Gotham. What was the most recent episode about, Travis? And yes, consult the ever-reliable IMDb if you must.
You got it up, my friend. I'll read the IMDb description now. Legend of Gotham Season 5, Episode 7, Legend of the Dark Knight, Ace Chemicals. Gordon races to uncover the criminal element threatening to end talks of Gotham's reunification with the mainland. A very much alive Jeremiah returns and organizes a twisted recreation of the murder of Bruce's parents with the help of Jarvis Tick, a.k.a. Mad Hatter.
Yeah, that's a really good description and lengthy for IMDb. I'm impressed.
They're blown out of water lately.
Yeah, they're trying to build their reputation, I guess. I'm just gonna flat out come out and say it. I absolutely love this episode.
Right in full agreement with you, Adam. This episode nailed it on so many levels. But I just gotta say, my overall opinion is they did the Joker origin very, very well. And in a Gotham unique style, and I'll applaud them for that.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment. We'll talk about it more. But do you think? Let me pose this question to you. As of right now, again, we haven't seen the finale or the 10-year time jump or what have you. But as of right now, in all the Gotham that you've watched, would you say that this is the best episode of the series? Because I would.
I'd have to go back and look, but offhand, it can't be any less than top 3, top 5. Like, it's phenomenal, this episode. Like, there's so many things going, but it all comes together. It's just fantastic. It's just, like, I love that they know that they got to finish in the next 3 or 4 episodes. This season's well put together, and there's no filler to me yet.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I think it's a function of time where they know they don't have time to throw in filler, so they're just going full steam ahead, and it's to the benefit of the quality of the show. I think like, look, say what you will about Titans, right, in terms of the finale, but that 11 episode structure really kept things moving. There wasn't, you know, wow, this episode is just killing time kind of feel with Titans, and same with Gotham. Now, I wouldn't want every DC show to be shortened, but you know these shows, and Gotham is part of the discussion, is making a case for, hey, shorter episode lengths could be a good thing. So yeah, I agree with that assessment. One of the things I loved was the inclusion of the importance of Zorro to the mythology of, you know, Bruce Wayne's origin, because you know, I know they did it in BVS, which I appreciated. And it was the, you know, the best looking Wayne murder scene I've ever seen. But I had a smile on my face, which shouldn't be the case. I mean, at how beautiful it looked, not because the Waynes were dying, because that's pretty sadistic otherwise. But so I like that Gotham brought it back, because remember that the Batman Begins had them at the opera, not at the at the theater watching Zorro. So I liked it. They included Zorro again, and also, you know, Zorro is one of my favorite characters that's not Batman or Superman. So so the fact that they have that connection is very cool to me, because I like both characters. So you know, in another life, I could have been Batman, is what I'm saying. But no, so I like that. And seeing Jeremiah reenact the movie, it's kind of like, I've wanted to see Zorro again on screen, you know, ever since the second Antonio Banderas movie. Never in a million years did I think I'd see him on screen in this kind of way. Like, that wasn't what I was depicting, but it was it was really creepy. And there's that part where he says, he has that line where he's like, you know, why did Zorro appeal to you? Is it because he instilled fear to the hearts of his enemies, right? And that's a classic line from Batman's oath in the original comics. So I really love that they threw that in there.
Oh, you, like, I'm right there with you, Adam. They were fantastic this episode. Even before that, James Gordon stumbles upon where Jeremiah shot that movie. And we don't even know, we just see disease and we don't know anything about it at the time. And then it all clues in, those guys that were running were the guys that he cut in the movie. He used the Ace chemicals to kill them. And you see the set, like, it's all fantastic the way they planned it out. And the way, instead of it just being Batman showing up and foiling Jack Napier's crime and him falling into that, Jeremiah wants to be in Bruce's memory. He wants him to remember Jeremiah as the guy that shoots his parents, which I thought was a fantastic way of having him try and, like, go against it and do this whole situation in the first place. It's just what they've done with Jeremiah this season has been spectacular so far, and I can't wait to see what he looks like when we see him return.
And that was a cool nod, actually, now that you mentioned it, about, you know, Jeremiah wanting to be part of Bruce's, you know, the most tragic day in Bruce's life. That's a cool nod to the Batman 89 film, you know, the Tim Burton film, because in that film, the Joker was responsible for Batman's parents' death. And so, in their own way, Gotham has done the same thing, like, with their own twist. And that's what's cool about it. But it's a nice nod. And also, the idea of, you know, random strangers being made up to look like Bruce's parents and then killed to reenact the murder is actually something that recently happened in... I mean, the Joker wasn't involved in it, but it's something that recently happened in Detective Comics, on Arc of the Books. And I wonder if that was done on purpose. I don't know, because I'm not sure that Gotham would have actually, you know, the Gotham writers and producers would have access to the most recent stories. But it's a cool coincidence, if it is indeed a coincidence. And if it was planned, more power to them. But,
Oh yeah. Like, that's, it's done right. And I don't even know what we're going to see yet. And I can't even wait to see the flash forward when we finally get Batman in the costume. So, like, this episode, we got to go into it a bit deeper, but I absolutely loved it. It's the best episode of the season, easily.
The whole fight scene, in terms of where, you know, they're on the they're at Ace Chemicals, and they're on the crosswalk there with the vats below them. That was, like, don't get me wrong, it was a quick fight scene, but it was a great fight scene.
I couldn't agree more. And also, some of the things that Jeremiah was saying just made me think of the Batman and Joker's relationship over the years. Yeah. Saying, like, you need me. Besides, if you didn't have me, you'd just be a cheap joke.
Yeah.
Without a punchline. We're going to be bounded. If we won't be bounded together with friendship, we'll be bounded together with hate.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, you're just bravo. Keep it on. But this is what the relationship between Batman and Joker is.
And again, it's I love the fact that it wasn't just Bruce beating the crap out of Jeremiah. They each struggled for the upper hand in the fight, because not only is that a great fighting technique to make the fight more meaningful instead of having one guy just waiting on another guy, but also it goes back to that push and pull between Batman and the Joker over the decades, right? In the various adaptations of it. So, and again, they threw another nod to Batman 89 but they inversed it, because the Joker, or Jeremiah, had Bruce by the, he was holding him by the collar, by the jacket, like Batman was Jack Napier in 89, which was cool.
Yeah. Which was cool. Awesome.
And when he fell in and how it was sort of accidental, I like that, because it absolves Bruce of any purposeful culpability of murdering, or quote unquote murdering at the time, thought it was dead, but
Jeremiah. Well, I couldn't agree more, and I'm going to shamelessly plug Adam was on the podcast, the movie, Movie Boys podcast,
Marshall Brothers podcast,
talking about Turtles. So basically, I'm going to equate this to the Turtles 1 movie. Adam is saying that Bruce Wayne is the exact opposite of Casey Jones at the end of the movie when he turns on the garbage truck, and in our eyes is led to believe crushes Shredder to death. In this one, Adam's saying that Bruce just got out of the way and Jeremiah fell to his accidental death, so he's completely absolved, whereas Casey Jones should have been brought on charges of murder. But we won't go, that's not here or there or anywhere.
We'll save that for superhero sci-fi. How about that?
Agreed.
That's a nice way to put that in there.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of, again, they really, with dispersing the gas, right, the toxin into the air, this was very much a homage to Batman 89, but done in a different way, in its own way. So, it's kind of like that when you see those memes online about respecting the past and embracing the future. That's what, Gotham is kind of doing with this episode.
Oh, agreed, Adam, agreed. They were fantastic. Even the gym stuff, the tension between him and Barbara and him and Lee, just fantastic. And Jim's not wrong when he's telling Barbara, you're kind of not fit to be a mom.
Yeah, she's definitely not. Yeah.
Maybe this is the shock she needs to try to be a bit nicer of a person. But Jim is not wrong for saying that. And I love the extra tension thrown in there when I personally thought she was going to die. But the big thing I want to touch on, the best scene for me, one of the best scenes in the entire episode, was when Bruce got Alfred out of the Wayne Manor before it blew up, and they had such a touching moment afterwards where you don't see him show emotion much, but they hugged, and Bruce was like, "I thought I was going to lose you," and Alfred was like, "Never, Master Bruce," and I'm like, "You're damn right, Alfred, you're damn right. You're the best."
And again, that was a very emotional scene between the two actors. And you can tell they have such, a long history together over the course of 5 years, and the chemistry, where you actually believe that sort of quasi-father-son bond that Alfred and Bruce have. But also that scene, the way Alfred says never, again, is a callback to Batman Begins when Wayne Manor burns down, right? Which we also see in this episode. Wayne Manor goes up in flames because of the explosives. I'm sure it'll be rebuilt, and they'll fortify the... I can't remember which wing it was in Batman Begins, but whatever that one was, they'll fortify that. I think it was the east wing or whatever.
Yeah, build it brick by brick.
Yeah, that's right. So, but yeah, you're right. That was an amazing scene, just for the sheer emotion of it all. And I thought, I got to give credit to the score for this episode. I thought the score was phenomenal.
Yes, just touched, just kicked in all the right moments. It's been doing that really well this season, to be honest with you, Adam. Everything's been firing on all cylinders. And besides your score, I want to touch on Selena and her character art basically coming full circle from the pilot episode where she sat there and did nothing while Bruce's parents died. She, instead of getting vengeance on Penguin, left and went to help Bruce, saved his life, and in my eyes, kind of redeemed herself for the way that she was acting for most of this season.
Yeah, you're right about the fact that it came full circle, definitely. That's a great point. And I think what they do here is, by having her come to Bruce's aid, but still having the desire to want to eventually go back and kill Penguin, and how she's not averse to committing crime. What I love about what Gotham and most Batman iterations do is that they never portray, to me, the best Batman iterations never portray Selina, aka Catwoman, as a full-blown hero.
Oh yeah, that's terrible. It ruins her dynamic.
She's an anti-hero. She's predominantly a villain, but you can call her an anti-hero who will do good when it's to her benefit or it involves somebody that she is emotionally connected to. And I think Gotham has been fantastic, not just in this episode, but also the course of the five seasons, of walking that line, that distinction, and never going too far into the she's a hero kind of motif.
That's a fantastic point.
So I really applaud what they did with her there. And like I said, I've always liked that actress and what she's done with Selena. And she continues to put the finishing touches on a great portrayal. So yeah, I really, really appreciated that dynamic. Since you mentioned it, unless there's anything else you want to mention or call out, why don't we score this particular episode?
One question for you.
Sure.
How many question marks do you think will be on the submarine?
Yeah.
Because I got a feeling there'd be a lot more question marks than penguin symbols.
Yeah, that's definitely, for sure. Yeah.
That was the only thing that we're talking about, was that Penguin and Riddler are building a submarine and Barbara's going to join them instead of killing Penguin, which I thought was kind of a cop-out for her, but we can attribute that to her becoming a mother. Maybe she doesn't want to kill anymore.
Right. That's a good. Maybe Jim's speech got into her house, into her head, sorry. But also, the interesting thing about the submarine angle is that it's kind of, again, I'm going back to the nods to past versions of Batman. In the 1966 movie, weren't the villains operating from a submarine?
I'm not sure. It's been a while since I've seen that movie. I know they broke into the Batcave, but I can't remember.
I'm pretty sure they were operating out of a submarine. So,
if you're right on that, then that is a fantastic nod.
So again, like Gotham was chock full. I mean, predominantly 1989, but I love that Gotham is able to sort of, you know, pick and pull from different iterations of Batman lore. So whenever I see those, it makes me smile. And so yeah, that was another one that I caught. Unless I'm wrong, and I'm sure the internet will tell me.
I don't think you're wrong, my friend. I think this whole season's been littered with callbacks and nods to the old Batman, old iterations of Batman.
Yeah, it definitely has. All right, so with that, why don't we give our ratings? What would you rate this?
You want a letter grade?
Let's stick with the letter grade. Let's go ahead.
A plus. This is 10 out of 10, 5 out of 5, 2 thumbs up. Any way you want to look at it, this is the best episode of the season.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I found no faults in this episode. I loved it from start to finish. It hit all the right notes. It, you know, as the kids would say nowadays, it hit me in the feels as a Batman fan. So A plus for me, for Gotham.
Sweet. We only have a few episodes left. I can't wait to see what they're going to do.
Unfortunately, what are there, 4 or 5 left?
Hold on. I think 4, Adam, I'm not mistaken.
That's going to be
nuts, my friend.
It's going to be tough to see it go. But the good thing is, we have Pennyworth and we have Batwoman to fill the Batman on TV void, if you will.
That's true.
All right, so with Gotham taken care of, let's move over to streaming and another corner of the DC Universe, and let's talk about the second episode of Doom Patrol.
Okay, let me fire off the IMDb resounding paragraphs of this. Season 1, Episode 2. The chief has disappeared, and the only clue that the team has to his whereabouts is an average donkey. That's it.
I mean, it's a sink, but the Gotham one was a lot better, I would say.
Oh, my God, yes.
So, this episode was so much weirder than the first. And usually, if this was any other show, like if they tried something like this on any other show, I would have said, you guys are nuts. I can't watch this. But for whatever, I can't explain why exactly. But on this show, with this group of characters, with this concept, it absolutely works. I love this episode.
We're in agreement, two for two, that is, because I thought this episode was fantastic. I couldn't get over how great it was, how self-aware the show is. And I think I'm going to answer your question on why you didn't care as much for this show is because you care about the characters so damn much already. It's crazy. I'm going to be honest with you. I full-blown would react the exact same way Robot Man reacted when we opened up the episode of him saying, like, oh, shit, oh, shit, oh, shit. Like, what's going on? Oh, my God. Like, I would be the same way, totally freaking out. Explosions were going on and people were jumping into holes and not coming out. I just, Robot Man continues to be my favorite character. And I just want more and more screen time with him. I love how he had tension with Cyborg and called him some form of like second rate robot.
Yeah.
It's just like you said, it's so weird, but it works so well.
Let's talk about, you mentioned Cyborg. So, you know, I'm going to take the conversation in the direction of Cyborg. I was really impressed with Jovian Wade as Vic Stone, a.k.a. Cyborg.
Right there with you, my friend. Crazy.
You know, the idea, the relationship with his father, I thought was great too. And his father was played by Phil Morris, who, you know, is Smallville's Martian Manhunter, but also Seinfeld's attorney, Jackie Childs.
Oh, my God.
You know, I almost want a scene where he's working on a mother box, right, to improve Cyborg's technology. And he just looks at the screen and winks and says, what? It's real and it's spectacular. I know they won't, but I'd get a kick out of it. the idea that in this iteration of it is that Cyborg is sort of, you know, rescuing people and sort of being the role of the hero because that's what his father wants of him. That's what his father expects of him. And his father is the one, because he, at this point in the show, he's not yet, ever been with the Justice League in terms of as a team member, but his father is pushing him towards, you know, if you keep on the trajectory that you are, you know, the Justice League will take notice and they'll accept you into their ranks. And he's even using that, like getting into the Justice League, you know, the reward for him will be upgraded armor, if you will, robotics. So just his father does seem a lot more cold and distant in this iteration, if that's the right way of describing it.
That is the right way. That's you nailed it.
But again, I thought the cybernetics, the armor, you know, the little we saw that looked good, and the way he part of the processing of information, the way he sees things on the screen, was very cool as well. So I like the look of him and the way they pulled that off. But, you know, interestingly, the episode takes us, so it's, actually, before I get there, the other standout to the episode for me was Crazy Jane. The actress was phenomenal.
I couldn't agree more. I'm going to jump in with just a little bit of Cyborg talk first before we dive into theirs. I just enjoy that the Chief and Silas had a past relationship.
Yeah.
And we got to see him. Even though we didn't get to see the Chief in present day, I just love me some Timothy Dalton. So I was eating up those flashback scenes and the scenes with him and Crazy Jane like you spoke of. It's nice to see that Cyborg can easily tell that the Chief is fun and like a bit more easygoing than his father. And you can tell that when he trained with him a little bit, which, and the Chief does tell him he can be there at any point in time. But just some of the things Cyborg did, like accessing that ATM, love how he accessed Argus database and FBI database with ease, just doing it because we know that he's been doing this for 5 years now. And just another change to the origin in this iteration, he caused the accident that killed his mother in a lab downstairs of his house. And he killed his mother. So that's crazy to think about that they're going that way. And I just wonder what kind of effect that's going to have on him going forward. Because that's the first time, like we other times, he's not the cause, but his mother does die. And this time, it's just like, whoa, that's pretty crazy. Especially at the end when he makes him relive it. It just wow, just fantastic, Doom Patrol.
Yeah, and the way they actually made like when the Mr. Nobody makes the team relive their sort of tragic origin stories. The way they portrayed that Cyborg origin and the way he's missing parts and skin, that was gruesome.
Yes, that was very gruesome, and somehow it still wasn't as gruesome as Young Justice's version of Cyborg accident, in my opinion, just to give Young Justice a little bit more props.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is a good point.
But we're getting both of these on this streaming app, and you can tell that they don't care. They're willing to go anywhere just to get the point across to us. And I'm loving that there's no constrictions, because if that was on the CW, you would have had to put a Band-Aid over his eye. Kind of deal. Like, it wasn't like he wouldn't be nearly as hurt. You couldn't show it as you can show it now, even on Gotham. Foot facts. You can't go to the length that they can go to with the streaming site. And even in the show, in the episode, Mr. Nobody is like, I'm doing this for talking to the Chief. He's like, I'm doing this for fanboys and fangirls and people who are paid for the app or the streaming service. And I'm like,
the fourth wall Deadpool kind of style.
And I'm like, I love that. That's just how self-aware the show is. And they did it with the Previously On as well. And I hear some people complaining about Alan Tudyk's narration of this story, and I'm not one of them. I love it.
I love it. It adds so much to the show.
It's just an extra level of comedy, and you just get more time with the main villain. Even though we're not seeing his backstory, we're getting familiar with him because of his voice and just his joking manner. I just can't wait to see what his past history with the Chief really is. That's my biggest, one of my biggest takeaways from this episode, is I want to see the past relationship he had with Chief and why he's been after Chief for so long. Because he does make the note, you've escaped from my hands or my grasp for the last time, something along those lines, before he takes him in that hole. I just wonder if he's come from before. Will we see this? Will we see Chief move from a couple places, like in previous memories?
Yeah.
So just so many questions, so many. I just loved it, Adam.
I thought Crazy Jane, though, was another. I think she was a standout of this episode, to be honest with you. Like, as good as Cyborg was, I was really, like, mesmerized by the performance for Crazy Jane.
And it worked on so many levels, Adam. She was Baby Doll with Cyborg, and it was working so well. She was switching her personalities. We were getting to see more of them. Yeah. And last episode, the personalities that she portrayed seemed to get along and have a good relationship with Cliff, Robot Man. But now this week, all the ones that we've seen besides the last one, didn't want to have anything to do with Cliff whatsoever. So
yeah.
Like that's just bravo to the actress, and just shows like what kind of effect that has on her teammate.
What is the actress's name again? I want to call it out because.
Well, you tell me what you thought of all those tapes, and I'll figure out her name for you.
No, I thought what I liked about it was, like you were saying, I love that she's integral to the it seems to be, at least from the tapes. You know, and the sort of map of the personalities and all the stuff that Robot Man finds, it seems like she's going to be a bigger piece, like the central focus of the larger main story at play here. And I like that. I like connecting it to a specific member of the team. I think is great. It makes it more personable. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, you're 100% right. Her name is Diane Guerrero.
Yeah, Diane Guerrero. She was fantastic. Like, the way she went from, like you said, the innocent little child personality to, you know, the crazy killer to just the flat-out rude and insensitive person. It just, like, it seemed like it was effortless. Like, she channeled all those different people effortlessly. Good for her.
You're 100% right. Where last episode she was bonding with Robot Man, bringing him to a toy place to buy a toy for her daughter's birthday, and now this week she's there throwing the plate after he cuts the sandwich, makes the sandwich the same way he made it for his daughter. She smashes the plate and just throws back all his transgressions into his face, saying like his daughter, like just saying, basically saying it so like your daughter would never want to meet you, kind of deal. And that's just bravo for her to go from so touching and warm to so crazy and hating in a matter of scenes. It's just astonishing to me.
Yeah, and I like how... So that was a standout. But the other part of the episode, here's where the crazy part comes in, where they're trying to find the chief. So they're trying to, you know, find an entrance into that black hole or other dimension or wherever he is. And the only way that Cyborg surmises that they could do that is to go through inside the donkey. So Rita has to allow herself to be swallowed by the donkey. Is that?
Or pushed into the donkey, or
pushed
something
in through the donkey's mouth. And it was the weirdest, most visually disturbing thing. Like when you see her, like she's inside, and you see the eyeball, and you see that I've ever seen on TV. Like that was just disturbing. But that led to the scene where, you know, Mr. Nobody tortures them by having them relive their tragic origin stories, and that's a part of it that I love. So within that weird, like, so what I love about that segment is that it takes you from. So many, as a viewer, so many different feelings of, oh my God, this is weird, to, oh wow, these guys are all, I all feel empathy for them because of how tragic their backstories were, but also to see each one of them sort of push past Mr. Nobody's, you know, manipulations. And come out stronger by the end of the episode on the other side. That was a great thing to watch, you know. So I just loved it. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up?
I want to talk about Larry a little bit because I have a feeling I just want more about it, but I want to know what. Like more about the negative man that's inside him. He tries to leave about 100 times to go to different towns, and the negative man inside him won't let him leave.
Yeah.
And he can't control it, and he can't communicate to it. But in the end of this episode, that's what saves everybody and gets them all out of that dimension. So I just got to know more about that. I don't want to know, do Chief know more about it? Will we get more about it in the next few episodes? I know we might get some flashbacks about Larry's life, but I want to get more understanding of his powers and the negative man inside him.
Yeah, because at the end of the episode, you see, he falls asleep and then the negative entity, sort of comes out of him. And so it seems like they are two distinct entities, I guess. I don't want to say people because one's a person, one's, I don't know what it is, but two distinct entities. And that's something I wasn't 100% sure on after the first episode. So I'm glad they cleared it up. But I do want to know, you're right, I'm so intrigued by that character. So, yeah, and visually, I thought every time they try and they showcase that negative entity, it looks phenomenal. And again, keep in mind, this is a streaming service budget, right? So,
yes, that's why we're pointing it out, people. If it was just a movie, I don't think we'd be touching on this effects, because these effects, well, for Larry's Negative Man, are movie quality, in my opinion. I couldn't agree with you more, Adam. And the one thing that I'm thinking about with Negative Man, Larry, is does Larry always have to be unconscious for the Negative Man to operate? Or will we, by the end of this season, get to a point where Larry can somewhat control himself while the Negative Man is operational? That is the key, because they need to find a way to communicate between each other. And I feel like we're gonna get that in the coming episodes.
That's a very good question. But time will tell. But yeah. So, is there anything else you want to touch on, or else we can rate it?
Let's rate it, buddy. I'm excited to see Vic join the team. He has his own room, and we're set up for the next episode.
All right. So, what would you grade this episode?
I'd give it a 5 out of 5, an A+, that's 2 thumbs up for me. It just does. I only got one other episode to compare it to, and I feel like this even improves on previous episodes, so it gets a 2 thumbs up, 5 out of 5, A+ for me.
Yeah, I am just, honestly, guys, I'm so shocked at how much I love this show. It just continually surprises me over the course of the first 2 weeks. And I found I had zero issues throughout the course of the 15 minutes. And I love that it's 15 minutes. I think that's great. So you're getting almost a full hours of programming. And that's a plus. So yeah, it's absolutely an A+ for me. Fantastic stuff.
Same. I just can't wait for it going forward. I did not think, after Titans, that I would enjoy Doom Patrol as much as I did. I know I enjoyed the one episode, but this has just made me care about these characters in a way that I didn't think was possible. And we're only 2 episodes in, so I just can't wait for the next 13.
As can't I. I'm so stoked. You know, we always get excited for Friday, but now Friday gets even more exciting.
does it ever. This and Gotham back-to-back. Just get out of town.
Well, Gotham, yeah, Thursday, Gotham, Friday. What a great way to end the week.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that's it. That brings our episode pretty much to a close. We hope you enjoyed it. It was fun for us to record. And let us know what you're thinking of the shows. And if you have any questions about the shows, drop them in the Tales from the DC Multiverse podcast Facebook page. And we'll answer them, or tweet us your questions, and we'll answer them. So definitely get involved with the show if you'd like to. We're all for that. But before we get out of here, let's do our usual social media plugs. Travis, where can people find you to continue the conversation?
You can find me on Twitter at Travis_156. You can drop me a line. We can chat DC anytime. I do a solo podcast called Superhero Discussions. It's been a couple weeks since I've done one, but the DCCW shows are on break. So when that gets back rolling, I'll get back rolling as well.
Awesome. If you want to interact with me on social media, you can at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter. You can also, as I mentioned, go to the Tales from the DC Multiverse, the podcast Facebook page. You can request admins to the group. Either Travis, myself, or Ryan will add you, and we can continue the superhero discussions there. Travis already mentioned it, that I was recently, so I'll call attention to it again. I was recently on the MVP movie podcast with our international correspondent, Stephen Marshall, who on that show goes by the name of Bob. So he's kind of like Crazy Gene. And that he has multiple identities on, for, at least for me. So I'll call him Crazy Bob from now on. The Simpsons have Sideshow Bob, we have Crazy Bob. And his brother Dan.
His brother Dan.
We talked about who better start talking, they better start doing accents like Niles and Frasier from now on, since I made those comparisons. I went on their show and we did a whole 2-hour discussion on the all things Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which I'm sure if Travis hasn't listened to it, he will, and he'll enjoy it because he loves the turtles.
I have started it, my friend, and from the first 10 minutes, I'm loving it so far. I can't wait to finish it.
So go check that out, folks, and give those guys a listen because they're great. By the way, Travis, make a special attention to the ending. I think you'll get a real kick out of it. And then if you're tired of hearing me talk and would just rather read what I write, you can go to revengeofthefans.com and read my Tales from the DC Multiverse column, which I'm in the midst of writing the column for the last two episodes before the hiatus of the CW shows. But this week has been really hectic, so it kind of slowed me down. I'll hope to finish that one before the week of new shows ends. So, but go read my other columns, and they've got a host of podcasts on RevengeOfTheFans.com that are all worth your time and attention. So check those ones out too.
One other thing, Adam, I'd just like to send a little congratulations to Holy Backcast on their 200th episode. Andy and Jamie are one of my original podcasts that I was listening to from the start. So I just want to send them a little extra congrats on 200 episodes. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's a lot of podcasting. And I remember, I think I started 2 years ago, I think it was, listening to that show, and I binged a whole bunch of them. I think I started 2 years ago on like New Year's Day or something like that, and I just binged and caught up, and it's definitely my in my rotation. And I was lucky enough to fill in for Jamie on one episode.
I remember that episode.
We're talking about, I think it was the start of Rebirth, and we talked some Batman Rebirth stuff. So back when I had high hopes for Tom King, long time ago. But I enjoyed immensely having Andy on, or being on Andy's show. And, you know, on the previous iteration of this podcast, we've had Andy on, and we'll hope to get him on with you here, Travis.
Oh, yes, hopefully. So we'll talk from Blue Devil.
Yeah, well, hey, that's you know what? You just brought up a good idea. We'll have to have him on when Swamp Thing starts, and Blue Devil makes his live-action appearance. That's a good call. I'll start the ball rolling and get his...
Do you have our people contact his people?
Which is basically a Twitter message from me to him, and we'll see where that goes. But I wish I had people that could do that. International correspondent Stephen, we here, I've added to your list of things to do.
Job title.
Get on that. Crazy Bob, that's your new. I'm going to send out a business card. You know, it's going to have Crazy Bob, a.k.a. Stephen Marshall, international correspondent, / my people. Congratulations, Andy and Jamie. You guys are put on a fantastic show. And you know what? These guys are a credit to fandom in general. So, definitely, I echo your sentiments to go listen to their podcast because it's fantastic. I'm actually the next thing I have to do, maybe I'll do it tonight, is listen to that 200th episode.
Same. It's a doozy. It's a doozy though. It's 1 minute shy of 3 hours. So I think I'm gonna wait for Friday for a commute to use that one.
Yeah, good idea. Good idea. Yeah. But definitely for our listeners, go check that out. Those guys are great. Yep. But that wraps it up. And as I said, we hope you enjoyed it, and we will be back next week. But until then, have a wonderful week, a wonderful weekend, whenever you're listening to this here podcast. So long, everybody.
See you guys.